I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
7:14, fog all over the place, so bad that I can't see the Crescent City Connection, and it's lit up from my perch atop the, the Regions Bank Building? What is it this week? I think the Regions Bank Building, that's where, yeah. Poydras and Magazine, so be careful out there. Make sure you got the lights on, of course, and no flashers unless you're stopped. That's what the law says. Jeff Palermo joins us now, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. Not a great weekend overall. I had a hard time sleeping Saturday night. I had a hard time sleeping last night because I'm a fan and I take this stuff seriously. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing well, Tommy. Yeah, tough weekend for the purple and gold and black and gold, that's for sure.
Where do you want to start with LSU? Because, man, it seemed like it was going well for a while.
Well, I think let's start with the lack of this team, other than the Arkansas game, and maybe I guess you could look at the second half of the UCLA game, the fact that they cannot run the football. And at times, they don't even seem interested in wanting to run the football or have very little confidence that they can run the football. We went into this season saying, hey, this could be one of the best offensive lines in LSU history. And here we are, and this team just flat out just struggles to run the football. And it's just really – it's baffling. It really is. And they had 10 possessions. 10 possessions in that game, and on every – first play of that possession, they attempted a pass. I mean, it just wasn't – it was like they didn't – I guess what happened to the days of, hey, guys, let's try to establish the run here. We got control of the game. Let's really exert our will on this defense. And, maybe it might have resulted in them putting up some more points in the first half. And I agree with Brian Kelly. It takes some of the pressure off Garrett Nussmeier. As Brian Kelly said, he doesn't feel like he has to stand on his head in order to win a football game. And that's just, I think that's where it starts. And then you can go to not being ready for a potential running quarterback. But I'll also say there was something that was in Texas A&M's favor that LSU really couldn't defend, was one the crowd got to the Tigers, unfortunately. And then there's something, you know, we can look at all the stats and all this and that, but there's one thing you can never factor really in any sporting event, and that is momentum. And when Garrett Nussmeier threw that first touchdown pass and A&M brought in their backup quarterback and scored on the next play, the momentum clearly shifted. And even though LSU did get a touchdown to kind of back off the momentum a little bit, it was too much. It was just too much, and LSU ended up crumbling there in College Station.
I don't think Garrett Nussmeier was the same after he got stepped on.
I agree with you, Tommy, and it just didn't seem like the accuracy was there. It just didn't seem like he had it wasn't the Garrett Nussmeier that we normally see. But then again, that's where it comes into, you know, why – you know, why put so much on his shoulders? Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is a good wide receiving core that LSU has. It's not great. There are not two first-round draft picks on this wide receiving core like you had last season. And I don't know, maybe Joe Sloan is kind of remembering the days of when they had a guy like Jaden Daniels and Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas, and you didn't really have to worry so much about calling runs, and because Jaden Daniels can run and all this, but it was so much of a focus in the off season, and to have a game where you rush less than 30 yards in a contest that you need to have some sort of at least a balanced attack. To me, that's just very, very frustrating, especially when you have a 10-point lead at half. And what you have an opportunity to do is, as I said, you can really take control of the football game. And they stopped A&M on its first possession. They did exactly what they needed to do in the first possession in the second half, and then it just the Nussmeier interception, and that was it.
So why could they not run the ball? Was the Texas A&M front that good? Because this is supposed to be one of the better offensive lines in the country.
Well, that Texas A&M front is very good. I mean, we can't take anything away from them. They got a potential 2 first-round picks there. There's no doubt about that. But LSU's got a potential 2 first-round picks there. You know, it's Mike Elko, the Texas A&M head coach, when he was asked during the week about the matchup in the trenches, he called it the $10 million matchup because you got a lot of guys on both the offensive and defensive line, the offensive line for LSU and the defensive line for Texas A&M, they're going to be making millions of dollars in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And let's see which one wins out. And it's A&M that's winning out. Now, I understand there's a lot of plays that, you know, LSU goes up to the line of scrimmage and they're looking at keys. And if there's a key that tells them that they got to throw the football, then they're going to throw the football. But I don't know. I just remember the days, Tommy, and they weren't that far ago, long ago, where you would come out and start a drive and say, hey, guys, we're going to try to run the ball here. Let's see if we can. And Kirk Herbstreit brought up a really good point during the game. When you're throwing on first down and then you get an incompletion, you're 2nd and 10 against a really good defense.
That's right.
And then they tried to run the ball, and they would only get 1 yard or 2 yards.
Then what are you looking at?
And then it's 3rd and 8.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah. And to me, that's where this game just really fell apart. And if LSU loses the Ole Miss game, Tommy, a lot of discussion after that game would have been, why can't LSU run the football? But because Garrett Nussmeier made the plays down the stretch and LSU wins in overtime, that all got forgotten. But that game played out a lot like this one, other than LSU was trailing in the Ole Miss game. But LSU nearly abandoned the run game in the Ole Miss game as well, but they were able to make up for it at the end. Here, they just completely abandoned it from the beginning, and it just never gave Texas A&M a different look, and the Aggies then were able to tee off on Garrett Nussmeier, especially in the fourth quarter.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Jeff Palermo about the LSU game on Saturday night against Texas A&M. Crumble, collapse, whatever word you want to use. There's no way to dress it up. That's exactly what happened. We'll talk about moving forward when we come back. 504-260-1870. That's the Okunard Jeweler talking text line if you have any questions or comments. Foggy morning out. Let's look at traffic on WWL.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
727, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Jeff Palermo about the LSU game on Saturday night, the collapse against Texas A&M. One thing, Jeff, before we get to looking ahead, these procedure penalties, I don't know. You know, Brian Kelly was pounding the table about those after USC, wasn't he?
He certainly was. And again, that crowd was pretty intense. I mean, you could sense it watching it on television. I mean, 108,000 fans, but it's been an issue, and I think it's a combination of things. It's a first year starting center. You got the quarterback, you got the offensive lineman. I think it's a combination. I think one of the penalties, remember the one where they called Nussmeier for, I guess, excessively using his hands, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. I thought that one was a bit bogus, but there were some there that were really difficult, really disturbing. Not the ones you're going to get. I think you do go into those kind of games, though, Tommy. As much as you try to practice for it, and you play the loud music at practice, and you preach on it, I think you really, when you're going in a hostile environment like that, a night game, a top 25, top 15 matchup, I think you almost you're going to expect to get a couple of them. You're going to get two or three of them, and you just hope they don't come at really tough moments, drive-killing situations, and stuff like that.
Damian Ramos had been money.
Yeah.
The third one was not his fault because the holder's not even looking when the ball is snapped and it hits him in the chest. It just was not a good night in general at all. It was a clunker. How do they recover from this?
Well, I think I jinxed it. I said in one of my articles at WWL.com that he is probably the most underappreciated guy on the team, or underrated player on the team. And then he came out and he just didn't strike the ball very well. The holds weren't great. Second time you have a snap where the holder's not even ready for it. I mean, that's very troubling again.
And crowd aside, I think that affected the momentum as well, Jeff.
Yes, and LSU does not have a primary special teams coach. And when things like that happen, that's the first thing you point to. You don't have like a number one guy that really handles these things.
Mm-hmm. Tell you what, Trey Green did get involved, and I'm going to tell you my secret right here against Alabama. You know what? Who's the kicker 32 guy knocks it in the cheap seats? What's his name? The kickoff guy?
Aaron Burrell.
Yeah. Onside kick against Alabama when they least expect it, because they're expecting them to just knock it into the cheap seats. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Huh? Can you keep that between us?
Yeah, we'll try that. But, hey, Tommy, just to close out, the path is still there for the playoffs. They're going to need a little help, but they can run the table, and they're going to be favored in every game. So the season's not over yet.
All right, thank you, Jeff. Appreciate your time as always. We'll talk to you again a lot before the Alabama game. You can always go to WWL.com, find Jeff's stuff that he's got posted there. We'll take a break, then take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street. Monday morning markets with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. I started to say Jefferson Parish. Time now, WWL First News. 7:45, quarter till 8. Foggy is all get out. Out there, be safe. Lights on, low beam. Flashers on only if you're stopped. Mark Rosa joins us now, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Take a look ahead at the week on Wall Street with Monday Morning Markets with Mark. How you doing, Mark?
Hey, Tommy. Good morning. Man, happy Monday to you.
Good luck taking a look a week ahead. Today, as foggy as it is, what's on the horizon?
Going across the causeway was about 200 feet of visibility. Got on Veterans to come to the office. I couldn't see past the hood of my car.
Wow.
Very, very thick. And that was, 5:30 or whatever time that was. But it was way thicker than I thought it was going to be. And thank you, incidentally, for mentioning about Eric. I didn't realize he had passed on Saturday. He and I were texting not too long ago, just a couple of weeks before, and I worked with him, as you may know, for the 12 years when I was doing the WWL piece for Tulane, live TV. So Eric and I had a lot of time to spend with each other, and he was just top shelf guy.
He really was. People, I think, don't realize that. And I was going to say this earlier, but since you brought it up, I'll go ahead and say it. He developed a close relationship with Fats Domino after doing an interview with him, and Fats didn't trust a lot of people. And it just goes to show you that something clicked between him and Eric, and they became very, very close friends. And Eric was very attuned to the music community in New Orleans. So,
yes.
I guess he knew. I guess he must have known. And I feel bad for his family. And I didn't realize he was 74 either. He carried himself a lot younger than that.
Yes, agreed. Definitely.
So let's hope he's in a better place and everything works out with his family. So thank you for those
nice words,
Mark.
Yes, sir. On the market, the time I looked at the Dow over the past month, and it's basically done nothing. It's had its usual volatility and what's going on, meaning that we're worried about what the Fed is going to do, worried about inflation, what's going to do. We're in an election year, and I can't tell you how many times I've heard, I'm not buying a house until the election is over. I'm not selling my house until the election is over. There are these big, long-dated decisions. Everybody's in this waiting game, and I'm not picking on people if that's what they want to do, but it's an unusual how the election or the upcoming election has kind of altered people's decision about doing things financially and non-financially. I mean, it's just a lot that seems to be riding on it, and I think the market is reflecting that we've had a 50-point basis point drop for the Fed. They're going to meet on November the 7th. There's a 97% chance of another 25 basis point decrease. And then on December 18th, they're going to meet for the last time this year. And there's a 73% chance of a 25 basis point decrease. So since last month, we're probably going to get one full percentage point, if all their guesses are right, one full percentage point out of interest rates, which I'll take every bit of it and wish for some more. The only downside to that, you know, Bank America CEO came out and said, wait, don't go too fast, because then we're going to, you know, stimulate the economy too much, and it's going to be right back with the inflation that they worked so hard to suppress. And it like you and I have said many times, I mean, for all the work that they've done, and I think a lot of it was destructive by nature, that they had to really get in and do a knock-up job about the economy to pull that inflation rate down. But it's still like prices haven't come down. We still are reporting on inflation every month, twice a month, actually, with the CPI and PPI, and then with the Fed's preferred inflation gauge. That's every other week we've got new inflation news. And seldom, one more time, seldom does it report a negative number, meaning that, collective prices actually dropped. So it's reduced the increase, and I would love the prices to drop, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners would also. But it's, you know, what kind of damage will it do if they have to achieve that? So it's been an interesting balance. But the economy seems to kind of shrug it off. We had new home sales last week that reported better than expected. I'm surprised, because last week we said existing home sales were at a 14-year low after the rates have moved up since the Fed dropped rates, and the mortgage rates have reversed their course and moved up a bit. So that kind of stymied the housing market. But earnings have been doing very well. 75% of the companies that reported earnings last week reported better than expected. They beat expectations. That's fantastic for those companies. And the earnings this week, big players, Microsoft, Amazon, Apple, Meta, Google, AMD, Pfizer, Ford, several companies, a lot more than that, but they are up to bat this week about their earnings announcements. So this week is last week they had very little economic news, just basically what I had mentioned. And this week is the one that's the heavy. We've got GDP for the third quarter that's going to come out. It's expected to be over 3%. 3.2% is an annual rate. That is fantastic for economy our size and have gone through what we've gone through over the past couple of years. You have personal spending coming up and personal income. And, of course, the jobs report is coming out. It seems like a long time ago before we had that the one that really shook up the markets at last month at 254,000 new jobs. And just to bring us back a little bit, I mean, late last year around this time, we probably had every month about 300,000 plus new jobs coming out. And that number just started to erode. It got into this year and it was in the high twos and then into the low twos. And it finally got into the ones. What do I mean by that? Oh, you know, 100,000 plus new jobs for the month. So it was when it was supposed to be about 184, it came in at 254. So that's when people were scrambling, saying, wow, the jobs numbers are way better than expected. And the Fed didn't see that coming. And that's when everybody was saying they're going to take a pause. And some forecasted that they're not going to do anything more with rates, which is still possible. However, this Friday for last month, for September, yes, the 110, this Friday is the first, excuse me, I knew I was looking at that differently. It's going to be October's job numbers are supposed to come in very low, 110,000 new jobs, which seems like a timing difference when the new jobs are being put on last month in September. And that's going to reflect, we'll see what happens on Friday, but the unemployment rate, which dropped the last month in September from 4.2 to 4.1, is expected to stay the same. But that's going to shape a lot. A lot of eyes have been on the report, the employment report, and this Friday it's due. So that we'll be sitting at the end of our chairs on that one.
Mark, when it comes to, and we always talk about trying to time the market and 401ks and what happens with the election. I don't know how any how much of an effect it could have, because as I understand it, Wall Street loves Democratic administrations because they love to spend money,
yes.
Right?
Yes, that's right.
And
that's
conversely, the Trump administration would be adverse to regulations, which would also be company friendly. So I don't see anything.
Yes.
And look, I'm asking you. You're the professor. I'm just trying to understand this. Am I on to anything here or not?
No, you know, Tommy, and one thing I want to add to that, I saw Market Watch, I'm trying to look for it now, but they're saying that, you know, the Trump tax cuts, which have remained in place, it was interesting because he gets out of office and in the Biden administration, they would say, oh, he's going to reverse the tax cuts and everything. Well, they don't like to pay taxes either. Nobody, quote,
likes to pay
taxes.
Nobody.
So, but it's coming up on those expiring. Now, if Ms. Kamala Harris gets in, she's saying, I'm going to let them expire. I'm going to let the tax rates increase. So that's usually not good for the economy. But on the other hand, what you say is right. They usually are putting those in social programs and the money gets spent. Then comes the argument, well, is it better to let people have the tax and they could spend their own money what they want? Or the government's going to put a lot in spending programs and inject a lot of money into the economy. So that's where the conversation comes in. But it's I think both can be very positive for the economy. I just think the uncertainty of who's going to be in office, that's probably holding the market back more than anything. It seems to be.
But
it seems like the economy is going to be fine no matter which one.
Yeah, no matter who wins. That's what I'm saying.
You know what I mean? No matter who wins, I think the economy is going to have a relief. And it will be positive going forward. But back to what you're saying about 401k, I mean, if you're looking to retire in December, and you think that the election is going to have some impact on your 401k. Well, okay. Well, you needed to start a year or two ago by moving things around and protecting your investments if retirement is imminent. For those who are saying retirement is, you know, decades away, I mean, you're going to have a lot of elections potentially between now and when you retire, if that's the course that you have in front of you. So it's all that time in the market, I think it's a fool's errand, and we've said that many times over time, Tom, because I think it's true. But that's where we are.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate the nice words about Eric Paulson as well. We'll talk to you Friday when we help you manage your money with Mark Rosa, President and CEO, Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, 756, 4 till 8, traffic now, WWL.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.